A story. It's a Bible story. Is that okay? Since we're here on Sunday, it needs to be a Bible story, which is good because I like them. And if you'll turn in your Bibles with me to Luke, the 10th chapter. Luke, the 10th chapter. I'm going to read this story, and I'm going to tell this story, and then I'm going to go back and I'm going to tell this story. Is that okay? That's kind of what I do as a minister. I tell the story, and then I turn around and I tell you the story. Because a lot of times we try to grasp, we want to try to catch as much of it as we possibly can, but it's hard. When Jesus spoke in parables, they were hard to understand. They were hard to grasp. And they're even hard for us today because to the extent that he takes them and to the depth that he takes them. Let's see if we can't jump into one of my favorites. And this morning I need to just speak on this simple thought. What a friend. Look at the person beside you and say, you have an awesome friend. There's an old song that we sing, what a friend we have in Jesus, all our griefs to bear. What a privilege to carry everything to Him in prayer. And we sing all the verses and all the chorus, and I am not going to go into singing, because one thing that I've learned over the course of when I've quit singing is I can't sing anymore. It's amazing how when you don't use that, it goes away. And it's amazing. I'll drive in my car now and I'll try to sing along with tapes and things I used to sing with. And God will just say, why are you doing that? I don't want you to do that. I don't really like the way you sound either. You know, and I'm like, well, I love you, Lord. He said, now there you go. Talk to me. Pray to me. I don't need you singing at me. I got a lot of people that sing at me. And so this morning, let's see if we can't find out something from this story. In the 10th chapter, verse 25. Jesus is reaching the pinnacle of his success, and he's got people coming to him from all manner of backgrounds. And in fact, he has Pharisees, Sadducees, lawyers, Levites. He has everybody coming at him that are trying to trick him up, that are trying to get him to say something that they can carry it back to the people. And then as they carry that back to the people, they'll say, see, he's not what you think he is. He's a bad person. And so on one occasion, we have such a statement. Verse 25. And then a certain lawyer arose, and I'm reading from the American Standard because I'm going to just tell it like a story. And I love this, the Amplified version. If you're reading it as a story, this is a good Bible to have. If you don't have an Amplified Bible, get you one. Because if you're reading the stories in the Bible, it expounds them. It puts some parts in parentheses. And then a certain lawyer arose to try or to test and tempt him, saying, teacher, what am I to do to inherit everlasting life? That is, to partake of the eternal salvation, the Messiah's kingdom. Everybody knew the Messiah was coming, and everybody knew he was looking for a specific type, and they knew that he was going to set up a kingdom. And so they said, when he comes, what do I have to do to be in that kingdom? That's what I want to know. And he replied, you must love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, and with all of your strength, and with all of your mind, and your neighbor as yourself. This is what the lawyer knew. When Jesus asked him, well, do what it says to do. And he says, what does it say to do? Well, I'm to love God with all my heart, soul, mind, and strength. I'm to love my neighbor as myself. Do we have that? Every one of us in this room got it pretty good. Now, how well do we do it? Struggling. Kind of hard to love people that don't love you. Kind of hard to give to people you know can't give back to you. Similar to the situation our sister was talking about earlier when she came to me. And the hardest thing I can do for people is when they say, man, so-and-so has done me wrong. So-and-so has cheated me. So-and-so has... And I have to look at them and I'm thinking, forgive them. Because here's the thing. There is no amount that you could do to them to get back what was done to you. If there was, if someone is saying, well, they killed my child, do you think they ought to die? The law says they should die. So, yes, That part needs to be fulfilled. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying we don't go by the law. But as for you, you don't need to be sitting in there when they hook them up to the electric chair just to get your revenge. That part will take care of itself. That part has nothing to do with you. As for you, you must forgive them. You must. You can't be unhappy until the day they finally electrocute them or zap them with juice or whatever they're going to do. And finally you can say, finally, I got my... No. I saw a couple the other day, the mom and the dad, the young lady that was killed, and they finally, finally think they found her killer up north, and they had the parents on there, and they were saying, do you finally feel like... And I love the response of the parents, because these are very mature, older people. They said, We will never have our child back. There is no revenge. There is no thing that could be done that would ever bring us. And I love that because they didn't have this mindset that, you know what, if we could ever just see them locked up, we could ever just see this, then we'd be happy again. No, they realized that, you know what, there's nothing in this world that can do that for me. There's nothing in this world that can make that for me. And the hardest thing as a minister sometimes is to look at somebody and say, just forgive and just to let go and just move forward. Because here's the thing. Either you're going to try to repay yourself and you can't. Either you're going to try to recompense and you can't. Or you're going to turn it over to somebody big enough that can handle it and big enough to heal whatever's hurting and big enough to move you forward in your life. He's the only one who has the capability. That's why those two rules are there. First, love God with all your heart, soul, and mind. And then secondly, love that other person that you're living in this world with as yourself, because that releases God to do miracles in your life, to give you a testimony that He can do what you can't do yourself. Now, for lawyers, for us that live in this normal world, that's hard to swallow. So we come back with this. And Jesus said unto him, you have answered correctly. Do this and you will have or enjoy an active, blessed, ended life in the kingdom. And he determined to acquit himself of reproach. See, the moment I tell you, look, forgive them. Just let it go. You don't know what they did. That's easy for you to say, Brother Lot. You don't know how much they owe me. You don't know how bad I got cheated. But see, now you're changing the point. What you're really trying to do is you're trying to approve yourself of what you're doing. It's not about the money. And it's not about what they did, because if it was so bad, you wouldn't be alive today. You wouldn't be sitting in this room. It may have been bad, but it wasn't so bad it killed you. You're still here. The problem is, I want to have a reason to feel this way. And I want to be exempt from the reproach that I'm going through. Now, in that, we have a problem. In that, we have a major problem, because now we're taking God out of the equation and we're saying, God, I got it. I can handle it. I know how to get what I need from you. I know how to fix this problem. And he said, trying to approve himself of reproach. You don't think he's ever lied? Cheated somebody? You don't think he was lying right then when he was talking to him, because the whole point of his conversation was to trap Jesus. The only reason he was talking to him was to try to trip him up. He didn't even like Jesus. Calling him teacher, master, when he didn't want to even, he never even thought of him as master. He's going to later be one of the same ones that's screaming when Barabbas, who's a murderer, is standing there, and Jesus, who hasn't done any wrong, sitting there, and they're going to say, which one do you want? He's going to be one of the same ones that's going to cry, give me Barabbas! But to justify himself, he said to Jesus, who is my neighbor? Now, are you ready for a story? There was once a man who was taking a journey from Jerusalem down to Jericho. Who wants to be my man? Come on. I got to have a lot of volunteers. If I have more volunteers, I'm going to have people. All right. So here I am. There's a man that is taking a journey. Over here with me. You two that dressed up in black, y'all did good a while ago. Come on up here. Y'all help me again.
Y'all could get extra drama practice. You stand there. Right over there. This man is making his journey from Jerusalem down to Jericho. As he is journeying, something happens. Thieves come out. Now, hit him. There you go. You fall down. Hit him some more. Hey, he volunteered for this, didn't he? He raised his hand. I did not even pull him out of the crowd. He can't say diddly to me. They took more thieves. Anybody else want to be? No. We got enough thieves. They took everything he had. They stripped him down. They beat him. They took it and they left. You can leave. Now, something took place. First, a priest came by. I need a priest. Very good. A priest came on what? How does the Bible say it? The priest was on his... How does it say it? On his way. See, a priest, you got to understand, a priest is busy. A priest is somebody that already has his life full, already got stuff to do. I got so much godly things to do and so many godly responsibilities. I do not have time to deal with mediocrity or to deal with normal stuff. And I notice this all the time because there's a lot of priests in the world. Last night when we came here, it was amazing how 90% of the people were on this side. Why? Because 90% of the people are on this side. When you walk in, you see most people, you think, there must be something happening over there, so I'm going to sit over here with everybody else. And so we sat down, and I noticed one kid sitting over there by himself. Now, I came to sit by my wife. I came like normal. But here's the problem. If you're a priest, you don't notice things. You're so busy about, well, you know, we're here for church. We're here to do... Priests don't notice. They're on their way. As he was on his way, he just happened up. He didn't want to find no hurt man. He didn't want to find no hurt man. He wasn't looking for no hurt man. He didn't want to have to deal with no hurt man. So what does he do? He decides, well, if I'd have been on that side of the road, I'd have helped. But I just happened to got on the other side of the road. And he walks on by him. Have a seat. He said, also there came a Levite, which is of the Sadducees, which is of the priest. He's of the law. The law. Now, when the law comes walking by, nothing wrong with the law, is it? Look at the person beside you and say, the law is a good thing. But what does the law do after something's happened? Can't do anything. The laws are given as perfect rules to live by. If I was the law, I would have walked by the man and I would have said, man ain't got nobody with him. Dumb guy walking around with money in his pocket, knowing it's dangerous out here. He should have known better than that. He ain't got sense to pour water out of a bucket. Let's leave him. The law walks by you. You ever see these court cases? Isn't it funny when they have this Judge Brown and Judge so and so? Because it's funny when that judge is up there, and you know what? He's detached. All he cares about is the law. And you sit there telling him your sad story. And, oh, I loaned so-and-so $30, and they said they'd give it back, and they ain't give me no money back, and done spent my money and drove my car, wrecked it into a tree, and then what he does is he just looks at him and he says, have you got a contract? No, he said he would pay it back. Well, you were dumb. And then the judge makes it look real dumb in that court case by saying, Well, you ought to have more sense to know than to look at that guy. He didn't have nothing to begin with, and you're going to give him your car, and going to give him $30, and going to give him all this. The law is nothing wrong with the law. The law can only see what is and judges according. That's why when you read Proverbs, Proverbs is a wonderful book before you get into anything. Proverbs is a very hard book after you done a bunch of junk. Because Proverbs makes it very clear, wisdom will laugh at you. Now, it's not much fun when you're sitting there thinking, what do I need to do? And the Bible says, when you've done this and done died with this thing and done that, wisdom will laugh at you. And you're thinking, God's laughing at me. No, God's not laughing at you. Wisdom is. Wisdom is that thing you needed before you made the decision. Wisdom is that thing. Laws are things in place before you go out and get yourself beat up and robbed and stuff. Laws are these things that there's a law inside of me that says, Tim, don't go walking around Jackson, Mississippi, down certain streets in the middle of the night by yourself. Now, there's a law inside of me. There's a law inside of me. They don't even have to be a written law. They're just laws. So all of us have that law. We know certain places, certain things. We just don't do. You don't walk around with $20 bills, counting them in front of certain people, and go walking out the back door. There's going to be some folks follow you out. But now for me to say, oh, I'm going to do it anyway, the law will later laugh at you. You ought to know better than that. But then, the Bible says there came a Samaritan. Samaritan come along. He was on his travels, on his journeys. He was equipped because he had an animal that he was riding on. This was not a poor person. This was a wealthy person. I didn't bring a horse with me today, so I'm riding along on my donkey. I come across. Man. I get off. I bind him. I take from my horse's backpacks. I take wine and oil. I soothe the wounds. Then what do? I pick him up. I'm not going to hit you. Don't worry. Man, you'll be all right. You going to be all right? Do I do that? No. You get up on my horse. There you go. Now, I'm going to walk, and I'm going to walk you all the way to Jericho, to where I get to an inn. When I get to the inn, I tell the innkeeper, I have a man who's hurting. I'm going to give you 2 weeks full wages here. Now, I want you to take care. I've got to go do my business. But when I return, whatever you've spent, whatever you had to spend on, if you had to go buy some chunky soup or you had to do whatever or you had to pay his light bill or whatever you had to do, I will repay it completely when I return. Capisce? Now, that's the story. And he looks at the man and he says, which one has been a neighbor unto that man? The good Samaritan. Now, can I tell you the story? That's the story. But I need to tell you the story. Everybody go back to your places. I love acting. When I was growing up, we never got to do it much. It wasn't but 3 of us. It's hard to do plays, me, my brother, and sister. It's hard to do a whole drama presentation that way. But you put that on. Don't ask me how. We'll figure it out. Now, let me tell you the story. There once was a man. He was a man that thought he could handle his own life. He was a man who thought he could do and survive. He would survive whatever happened. He was always able to get by. He was always able to figure it out on his own. He always figured out his marriage. He always figured out his work. He always came through and never got scathed, and things never seemed to quite get him. They would bite at him and he had some problems, but he always seemed to figure out a way. And because of that, he became self-sufficient. This man, this self-sufficient man, you'd look at him and say, "Look, you don't need to be doing that." And he'd say to you, "I don't care. I'll figure it. Man, what are you talking about? I got it. I'm smart. I'm not dumb. Hey, you don't need to be dating that person. I'm not going to do anything. I'll dump them if they try too much. Or, hey, you don't need to be going to that party. Look, I can leave when I want to. Don't tell me what to do." And so on his journey through life, there came to what? What is the Bible? When the Bible says a thief, who is a thief? Oh, come on now. Satan is a thief and a murderer. And he comes to do nothing but to kill and to steal and to devour everything that you have. And so as this man that can handle anything in his life, he can take on a bear with a switch. I mean, he's a bad man. He can do anything. I meet them all the time. They bad men. They can do anything, but they're in the hospital now, and now they can't heal themselves. And, "Oh, you better call a preacher or something. I need a preacher. No. You the man. You have been able to handle everything. You can handle your own money and handle this and handle that. But now I've done run into somebody who's bigger than me and stronger than me and mightier than me. And when I'm in his world," because this is his world, that this is their domain. This is not your domain. You are a pilgrim passing through it. You don't own this world. There is a king of this world. And we keep saying Jesus is the king of the world. No, he's not. Satan is the prince of this world, the king of this world. When God comes back to reclaim the world, he said, "I'm going to burn it all. I'm going to start back from fresh. And then my kingdom is going to descend." In Revelations 20, 19 and 20, 21, "My kingdom's going to come down, and then you'll see my kingdom. Then you'll see what it looks like when I run a world. But until then, understand, you will have tribulation. You will have trials. You will have difficulty, because the prince of this world has declared war on you. He can't defeat God, but he can hurt people." And so this self-sufficient man coming along, walks along, and they catch him. Maybe it's pornography. Maybe it's lying. Maybe it's stealing. Maybe it's anything, everything. Maybe it's just, "I'm going to get my revenge." Maybe it's, "I'm not going to forgive. Man, I don't care what it is. He don't need much. He just needs something that he can beat you to the ground with and make you feel guilty with. Maybe it's something you did 20 years ago. He doesn't care what it is, as long as it beats the life out of you. As long as it keeps stealing your family and your kids and your marriages and your relationship. He has no care of what it is, as long as it's something. And through that, they beat on him. And he falls, this mighty man, this man that can do anything, this man that can take care of himself. He now is laying on the ground. Guys, I feel pretty good this morning. Is that okay? I got some chicken noodle soup in me right now. I feel good. And so they beat on him. When they're through beating him, robbing him, stripping him of his dignity, of his self-esteem, of his ability, we'll tell you what we all do then. We hide. We're not in the middle of the road anymore. We're off the side of the road. We're laying in a ditch somewhere where nobody can notice and nobody can see us. And we sometimes just rather go ahead and die because we feel so humiliated, and people are going to laugh at us because they're going to think, "You got caught by that? You let drugs do this to you? You let... No, it wasn't the drugs. That's just the result. It was those spirits that were stronger than him. It was those things that he thought he was mightier than. When they had stripped him and thought they had left him for dead, they left. Now, Jesus said the first person that comes walking by in your life is who? The priest. Now, the first person that comes walking by in your life is religion. Religion comes walking by. Now, here's the problem with religion. Religion is all nice, clean, well-dressed, well-kept, got it all together, detached. Don't have no spot. I don't hang out with those sinners. I don't eat with those sinners. I don't do anything with sinners. I'm telling you what, you get yourself cleaned up and you get into church and then we'll have a communication. You know what? You need to change clothes. We can't hang out together. You dress a certain way and I'm not going to be seen with somebody like that. You're going to have to do better. And when you do better, then you can come to my church and you can hang out with me. When you do better. But you don't understand. I'm beat up. I don't have the strength to do better. You don't realize I've had the life beat out of me. Well, I'm sorry. You know what? That's just your fault. You shouldn't have been in there by yourself. You shouldn't have done that. You shouldn't have, you know, I got here. If I can get here, anybody can. Don't tell me you can't. Anybody ever been around religion? Religion says when you get it right, come see me. Religion says when you get yourself straightened up a little bit and act a little better, I got religion in my church. I got people, they're not going to hang out with you. They're not going to. You don't even come close to the quality they think they are. Religion does that. It don't mean to. It's just, it can't touch. I didn't even want to run into you. See, religious people, they not, I mean, the worst thing that happened to a good church like that today is some old hobo walking their back door. It'd mess up their whole service. I mean, I can carry you the first assemblies of the dead, and buddy, you could walk in there all raggedy and all, man, up to a beard, all this, and sit on somebody's chair, that sit there all of a sudden, you're just like, man, God just brought me here today. Well, I don't know why He brought you here. Because we didn't ask for you. And at lunch that day, boy, you sure want to be at Santa Fe that day. Because, buddy, that group that all hangs out, the religious group, is going to be sitting around that big table eating their big meal together. And they're going to be, did you see so-and-so at church today? Did you see that? Oh, my goodness. Who invited that? They could have at least took them by Fred's or something, got them some clothes before they brought them into the church. Come on now. Some of y'all ain't never been around religious people. I grew up in religion. I was religious before I knew God. And 9 months before I was born, I knew how to dress, how to act. I knew what you said and don't say. I knew you say ma'am and no ma'am, yes ma'am, yes sir. I mean, I knew all that stuff. I knew how to act. I knew to call them pastor and not brother so-and-so. Man, I knew all the reverence. I knew all the stuff you're supposed to do. Didn't know why I was supposed to do it. I just knew I didn't want to get whooped. Problem was, I didn't get to see people get healed and I didn't get to see people get delivered. And we'd hear about it. We'd read books about it. There'd be a few crazy groups that would do the tent revivals all over and see crazy things happen, but I mean, come on now. And religion passes you by. Because if you can't keep up with religion, you get left behind. The second group that you're going to run into is a Levite who represents the law. Anything wrong with the law? The only problem is the law wants to help you. The Levite did what? He looked upon him, but realized, I don't have any oil. I don't have any wine. I don't have anything to put you on. I don't have any way to help you. I can tell you the truth. I can tell you why you shouldn't have done it. Anybody ever have a I told you so people? These are wonderful people. Nothing wrong with I told you so people. Your mama's probably not I told you so. You may have uncles or cousins or people in your life, they're I told you so people. Nothing wrong with them. Don't be mad at them. What they're doing is they're saying, I can see you're hurting. I can see that you're in front. I wish you would have come to me. You hear this phrase. I wish you would have come to me before you would have done all this. I wish you would have come to me before you decided to do this. I wish. Why? Because here's my problem. All I know is what you should do and what you shouldn't do. I know how you should act and you shouldn't act. But once you've done it, I don't have enough love or compassion. I don't have it inside of me. See, that's what this problem was. Who was the one that came to Jesus in the story? A Levite. Somebody who says, what am I supposed to do? He quickly said, you're supposed to love God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and your body. Praise God. And what else are you to do?
to love your neighbor as yourself.
And Jesus says, good, go do those things and you'll have eternal life.
Oh, I got a problem. I don't really love them. And I really don't love God. I just do it because the law says I'm supposed to do it. But if I had my choice, I'd rather stay at home and watch TV. But I can't because I know if I don't, I go to hell. So therefore, I come to church. Anybody in here like that? The only reason you're here today is because you don't want to go to hell. I mean, that's the only reason you're here. Come on, be real. You don't like it here. You didn't want to get up. You grumbled the whole time you had to get around. Well, why? We've got to go to church. Miss all stuff. We've got family stuff coming up this afternoon. I've got to get back. I mean, it's just in your way. But you don't want to go to hell. And you know the law. Cease not to assemble yourselves together as the order as such is. Building each other up. I know I'm supposed to be in church. I know I'm supposed to be here. So I'm here. Hurry up. I know all this. I've went to Sunday school all my life. My problem is I see hurt. I see people every day at work. And I see people all the time in my life. And I see my family. But my problem is I don't have real compassion for them. I know what I'm supposed to not do. And I know everybody's taught me what I am supposed to do, not supposed to do. I'm not dumb. Brother Lott, I just don't have anything on me to actually forgive and to love and to do. And so the law looks at you, snickers a little bit, you shouldn't have done that, and it walks away. But Jesus said there is a third man that comes by, and he is a Samaritan. Samaritans are what? They don't know what a Samaritan is. They're a mix. They're a bastard. They are totally any bad words you want to come up with. That's what they were. Dogs. They called them dogs. I mean, in their time, you think of the worst words you could come up with. And he said there was a dog that came up. There was a half breed. There was a whatever you want to call it. Came riding up on his animal. So therefore, he had to have some money. He was a wealthy man. He was somebody who was well-to-do. Don't know where he came from. Don't know who he is. Don't know his background. We just know that he just ain't one of us. Jesus said, you know what? I came into this world with no reputation. I came in the order of Melchizedek to be a priest unto you who had no beginning and has no end. I've come to be one that's not accepted of my own, rejected, called. In fact, they told him on certain occasions, at least we know who our daddy is. Why? Because the whole rumor about Jesus was, now Joseph is his dad. Hold on now. I heard his mama was pregnant before they got married. So we really don't know who that boy is. There was an old dog that came riding up. But this old dog had something that nobody else had. The law didn't have no oil and the law didn't have no love, but this old dog had some love. And those high priests didn't have the time of day, but yet this priest who sat upon a horse, that one walked, but this one had his own animal. This one didn't have to do it. This one already had his own way. He already had a throne. He already had a dominion. Already had power, but yet he stood off of his own power, and he stepped out of his own dominion, and he stepped out of his own royalty. He stepped off one of the most precious things that he had, his own eternal glory. And there he stepped into this world and saw hurting humanity. And what did he do? He took of his own oil, and he took of his own wine, and he rubbed it upon him. That's the reason he says in the first sermon he ever preached, "For the Lord hath anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor, to separate those that are hurting, to bind up the brokenhearted, to release those that are in prison." That's my calling on my life. I got off my high horse to be able to come down and do something that the priest couldn't do and the lawyer couldn't do. And I bind them up. And I raise them up and I put them. I clean them up. I bind their wounds. I fix them all totally clean again. There's nothing wrong with them. And somebody say, but that's what he does. He cleans us up and then he says, praise God, I'm going to get back on my horse and head on.
No. You're missing the point here. Story ain't over, is it? This it is for most of us.
Well, I invited them, brother Lott. I prayed for them.
Well, your problem is that you don't realize your part in this story. I clean them up. Jesus cleans them up. Jesus says, you good. I'm telling you, if I've forgiven you, he whom I've set free is free indeed. Boy, you free. I'm telling you, you are forgiven. You are delivered. There ain't nothing wrong with you. Now get up on my horse. I put him in my place. For he has powers and dominions above all powers and principalities of the air and spirit, everything that is in the earth and everything that's under the earth, and everything declares that he is Lord. But yet then he has said he has caused us to be seated with him in heavenly places. He says, you get up on my horse. You're not walking the rest of the way. Ooh, come on. I'll walk. I was born for this. I was born to serve. And now I get you all the way over to the inn. You come off. You're the innkeeper. No, you know what you really are? You're the church. You're the blood-bought church. You're the one that's already been redeemed. You're the one that's already has a job in life. You have a purpose in life. You're not a traveler anymore. You're someone that helps travelers. You're someone that redeems travelers. You're someone that, because here's the thing, he's still needing help. He's still needing attention. He still ain't got it all figured out. All of his wounds haven't been taken care of. Just because Jesus come along and healed him and saved him one night, you think, oh, well, he's taken care of. No. Let me tell you, if that was the end of it, there wouldn't be no reason for this building. We just all go around and tell everybody, bow down right now in your house. Let's just go ahead and get saved. Praise God, you're saved. All right, I can move on to the next house. No, God did not set up that crazy system. I'm telling you, Billy Graham has done more damage than he has good. And these other evangelists have done more damage than they have good. And you want to know why? People say, oh, you're against Billy Graham. No, I love the message of Billy Graham. Billy Graham won a lot of people to the Lord. But here's the problem. We got worse people today before Billy Graham started preaching in 1950 and filling up Colosseums than we do now. Well, then what's the problem, Brother Lott? Let me explain this. You can preach to them and then you can heal them and bind them, but if you walk away, get back on your horse and go to the next Colosseum, you've left them for the enemy to come along and wear them out again. I am sick of it. I am sick of them trying to record something on television. We can have preachers come to Winterfest in Knoxville, Tennessee, and they'll want to record it, so that they can go back and tell somebody they preached in front of 20,000 people. I'm like, just gag me with a spoon. Preaching ain't where the job is. He used a donkey to preach. He used a rooster to convict Peter. Any little old thing can be pulled and plucked out of the ground to be a preacher. But that's where the work's done. That is where the difference is made. Because when he cleans them up, he said, I will add unto the church daily. I'm going to clean them up and bring them to you. Clean them up and bring them to... Well, where are they coming from? I have no idea where they're coming. Somebody's getting them off the side of the road. Somebody's picking them up. Man, our hotel's full. I don't know how we got our hotel full, but I'm telling you, they're full of all kinds of sin. Well, are they paying? No, they're not paying a dime. But I want to tell you, there's plenty of money. I don't know where it's coming from, but it seems like God's always supplied every need we have. Things are just happening. He looks at him and he says, here's 2 weeks. Now, this is not for you to put in your bank account, open you a bunch of CDs, so when it gets tough times and ain't no visitors at your church, you at least be able to pay the light bill. This is so you would take it and mend that one. And if you have to buy another building, just go ahead. Whatever you have need of to take care of what I bring you, just know this, I will be back. And when I visit, I will write you a check for whatever you need. You just keep mending and binding and healing and delivering and teaching. And when I return, I want to see him well. And when I return, I want to see others I've brought in well. We don't realize it in this building today, but we are that church. The youth minister came in last night and said it very well. He said, some of us are the only billboard that they will ever see. Some of us are the only teaching that they'll ever see. Some of us are the only church that they're ever going to see. And if we're not a legitimate church of Christ, if we're not mending and binding and loving and caring for people, who's going to? And don't get me wrong. I have nothing against televangelists, Billy Grahams. They're great men. I want you to go off and say, well, I hate Billy Graham. No, no. They're some of the greatest preachers of our day. But there was something missed in the process. And our generation now runs around 92% says, I know the Lord, I know the Lord. I heard Him out on TV one night, got saved. No, you don't know the Lord. Because you can't know Him unless you go by His system of knowing Him. He'll clean you up. But then He attaches you to be totally matured to where one day you put on a red shirt and you say, I'm part of the church. I know what it's like to travel and get beat up. These people that gave you their testimony today, all they are the church that's telling you, I know what it's like to make a journey, and I know what it's like to get beat. I know what it's like to be hurt, and I know what it's like to fail. I know what it's like for the enemy just to beat you to nothing. But then I also know what it's like for him to clean you up, to straighten you out, to bind you up, and to put you somewhere where you can be useful. I know what it is to be taken from nothing to a something. And this morning, folks, that's what God is doing. And there's some of us in here that have not made that transition. Either we're this guy right here. We still got wounds that need to be bound up. We got hurts that need to be forgiven. We got flaws that need to be gotten past. Who does that, Lord? That man does that. His name is Jesus. I can't do that part. See, I'm an innkeeper. That's all I am. I don't know anything. I've never healed anybody. I've never delivered anybody. I've never saved one person. But my Lord has saved millions. And He is no short of power today than He was yesterday. Whatever it is, bondage, whatever disease, whatever addiction, whatever it is. There's guys that can stand up here and tell you about how God has taken away cigarettes. Now, they may still struggle every now and then, but God has removed that, and they're as free as they want to be. I'm telling you, don't tell me what my God can't do. I've never delivered anybody, but I want to tell you, my God can take care of any problem you have today. That's the message. Brother Lloyd, I know I've got that. I'm saved. Well, then your problem is that you're still either living on the welfare system over here. I'm just going to hang out at the hotel. You guys tell the Lord I need some more stuff. I don't quite feel right yet about working. You know, I'm still trying to recover from all my pains. No, you've been recovered, you old lazy fart. You are recovered. You just gone at ease. It's easy to sit there and watch somebody else do the singing, somebody else do the preaching, somebody else do the cleaning and the working, and somebody else show up. You don't have to if you don't want to. You're just still living on welfare. Tell the Lord when He comes by again, I need some more stuff. No, God is saying it's time for you to transition from that white to that red. And that's where you don't just become a hearer anymore, but you become a doer. I've hung out in here long enough. I know what I need to be doing. The enemy's going to look at you and say, well, you don't know everything. No, I don't know everything. But what I know will keep me busy for a long time. What I already know to do, who I already know to forgive, who already I know to help, I guarantee you I can work at least a good couple of weeks without having any problems. And we're either one or the other in this room today. I'm going to say it the way Jesus said it because it comes out better. Which of these do you think proved himself a neighbor to him who fell among the robbers? And he answered, the one who showed pity and mercy on him. Jesus said to him, go and do it likewise. But a lot, you need me to come to the altar. I'm going to tell you, if you don't know Him through your deliverance today, you need to be at this altar. But I'm going to tell you, if you're already past this, if you're somewhere hauled up in the hotel over there,
and you're not working for God, giving all to God, loving God, then you're not pleasing Him. You're the one, He says, go and do likewise. But Lord, they may misuse me. He'll make up the difference. That's His responsibility. He said, when I come back, I'll make up the difference. We're so worried about, oh, I'm going to lose such, I'm going to lose this much. You're not losing anything. Don't you think God can turn right back around? This last week, I owed my dad a little bit of money. I had to finish paying Elisa's motorcycle off and a few other things that I had. And I owed him, you know, a few hundred dollars. And it was $1,900 what I owed because I'd borrowed some from my motorcycle last year. I wanted my motorcycle chrome back out. Got me a new chrome plate. And I said, loan me some money. Let me fix it up before I go. I ain't got no money. I said, I'll work snow cones and pay at fireworks and pay it off. That's what I always do. I always pay them back, but work at fireworks and I give them my money. And so I was sitting there and I said, Dad, how much I owe you? And he was talking to us and he showed up. He said, Tim, just give me 15. He said, I don't want no more rest. I'm just giving to you. Now, I don't know where that $400 came from. I don't know what happened in my life somewhere. See, that's what I was thinking. In my mind, I'm thinking back, okay, who got me? Who did me wrong? I couldn't think. Can't count, but I'm thinking, God kept up with that somewhere. And somewhere in there now, either a grocery store did me wrong, or maybe I got robbed on a deal that I thought I shouldn't have got robbed on. But here's the thing, I didn't say anything. I kept right on moving. And God said, Tim, I put it on His heart to make sure that that got back to you. See, you don't want to know who's going to write you a check and pay your house. No, you don't know who's going to. Your job is to give. Your job is to love. And what the world needs to see from the church today is a church that loves and gives. And you're saying, well, brother, a lot if we act like that, people take advantage of us. Yeah, but you know what? They're not responsible for the check. God's responsible for the check. I've never seen a group that ever was giving to God and loving to God that God didn't multiply and God didn't take care of and God didn't bless and God didn't prosper. It's the moment we decide, I can't touch that. It's the moment we walk by people and laugh at them and say, shouldn't have done it. That's the moment we become a church that nobody can get touched in. So I ask you today, who are you? Will you stand?